On the Record with Gavin Riley on News Talk.
Throughout the papers, it isn't making the front page for a change, actually, and something that's a little bit different is, of course, the COVID crisis that we've been dealing with for the last 18 months, but it is no less significant for that. Yesterday, 2,000 new cases of COVID, more than 2,000 new cases of COVID were confirmed in the Republic of Ireland, the first time that we've gone above 2,000 since January 21st. As of midnight yesterday, 229 people in hospital, 37 in ICU with COVID. But it comes, of course, as that vaccination programme continues to speed ahead, 80% of the adult population fully vaccinated, heading towards 90% with one dose. And joining me to discuss all of this and where we are in the pandemic at the moment is the CEO of the HSE, Paul Reid. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Sean.
Let's just start maybe with the latest vaccination figures, Paul. Obviously, with the 12 to 15 year olds registering this week, where do we stand in terms of the adult population, but also how many have registered in that younger age group too?
Yeah, I think every day seems to be another great milestone with the vaccination programme. I think it's really something that's won the hearts and minds of the public in general, and the response has been phenomenal overall. I think as we are at the stage now, overall in total, vaccines administered now is 6.35 million and two great milestones now achieved of 90% of the adult population now partially vaccinated and 81% fully vaccinated. And, you know, another key milestone, 2 million of those 6.35 vaccines delivered by GPs. So it's been a great health response and public response overall. Specifically on the 12 to 15s, as you know, the portal just opened on Thursday and just had the figures up to yesterday evening. I don't have this morning's one just yet, but just over 80,000 registered on the portal and over 20,000 of those completed now up to yesterday evening. So it's really moving pace, great response in the early days, and we do expect to see that continuing over the next couple of weeks as well.
And how many is that of that age cohort? How many are in the 12 to 15 year olds? So 80,000 out of...
Yes, it is total just over 280,000 in total in the CSO data for the 12 to 15 year olds. And that kind of reflects what we've seen on the portal registration and what we expected really, because what we do want our parents and guardians to take time, read the information, listen to our information, talk to us, register then as appropriate and come forward. And as we've gone down through the ages, we've generally seen that kind of an uptake in the early days and then continues increasing, you know. And it's what we're seeing, because in reality, we're seeing up to about 8,000 registrations per day from all age groups. You know, people are still registering on the board to get vaccinated, which is very encouraging too.
We're basically, according to Brian McGrath, certainly on the back of the Sunday Times, I mean, we're really approaching full vaccination here with 90% full dose, 80% second dose. Now, Brian McGrath is talking today in the papers about 9% of people that they think won't get the vaccine or haven't expressed an interest in registering for the vaccine. How do you go about targeting them?
Yeah, there's different ways of reaching. We do want to continue our communications to reach as many people as possible. One aspect of that has been our walk-in centres, and that's been really encouraging to see more people coming through from all age groups. In fact, last weekend I was over in Sligo, vaccination walk-in centre, and just by complete chance, an 87-year-old woman from Sligo drove into the centre, got her vaccination, had a really good chat with her. Mary O'Connor is her name, and she just explained to me that she had been thinking about it, her talking to her family about it, her GP. She didn't come forward and then just said, look, you know, this is silly, I should go forward and protect myself. So that's kind of one aspect. Second aspects are vulnerable groups and the workforces, where we will continuously look at, and we're doing some more analysis now of, you know, where the uptake is, what vulnerable groups we might need to work with stronger. And we are doing that with some vulnerable groups. And they're kind of the next stage as we reach the kind of final phase of this programme that we want to focus in on.
Are those vulnerable groups a significant portion of those left? And how are you thinking about going and targeting them? Because obviously the initial idea was to use the J&J, the single shot, for those groups that might not be as readily, as welcome to come forward. But we've kind of gone past that now, haven't we?
Yeah, and that's, you know, there's been different solutions for different vulnerable groups that we've been working with. Some of the travelling community, Roma community, some would prefer to get the vaccines in within their own communities, some would prefer GPs, some would prefer just to do it like vaccination centres like others. So we're really trying to work through the most appropriate way to reach the vulnerable groups, to communicate with the vulnerable groups, So, you know, it's not a simple one. We have been making progress throughout a range, and, you know, even in prisons, we've completed a very significant program in the prison service. So it's, you know, it's the phase we expect to be at this stage, and it's the one we're going to continuously, relentlessly at.
Bree McGrath also talking in that Sunday Times piece about us effectively being done using Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca, moving very heavily towards the mRNA vaccines. Is that right? Are we kind of, the future here, whether it's in regular vaccines or boosters, is going to be mRNA?
Yeah, that's the likely trajectory. It's the likely trajectory at the EU level. I mean, at the EU level steering board, they have recommended each country makes the decision to suspend the further deliveries of Johnson & Johnson or indeed AstraZeneca. And that's the approach that we will likely be taking, because we are on the mRNA program now very strongly. It's widely available. We've walk-in centres available for it. It's available in our GPs. It's available in our pharmacies. We have a very good delivery coming now with the Romanian deal that the Taoiseach initiated with the Romanian president, which will see over 700,000 delivered over the next 2 weeks. So that gives us a really strong supply line to complete the 12 to 15-year-olds, but also to, as you've mentioned, to reach some of those more vulnerable groups as well and complete our dose tools for others.
Paul, it's a bit of a strange time, I think, for people at the moment, because obviously, as we've mentioned, the vaccination programme is going like the clappers. But we saw yesterday more than 2,000 new cases, the first time that's happened since the middle of January. And that obviously gets the anxiety up. How concerned are you?
Yeah, and first thing I'd say to all of your listeners is, yes, we should always take great confidence from the vaccination programme. I can see it working. I can see it in terms of hospitalizations. I can see it in terms of ICU. But there is a concern at the moment. Yes, now we've started to reach these figures of 2,000 per day, which we haven't seen since January. Now, in January, we were certainly dealing with 2,020 people in hospital and 212 people in ICU. But the rise in cases in the last 6 weeks are quite significant. I mean, we've seen over a six-fold increase in cases over the last 6 weeks. We were, you know, less than 40 cases just over 6 weeks ago. And now this morning, we're 248 in hospital and 43 in ICU. So what we do know, and we've always known, Sean, is the lag effect, where you see higher case numbers coming through, and then generally takes about 10 days or so before you see hospitalizations rising. So our concern looking forward now towards the end of August and into September is that we do see this continued trajectory continuing from those numbers, which thankfully they've come off a lower base, but still 258 people are a lot of people who are very sick and need respiratory support in many cases, and in some cases ventilation. So it's still a very live threat to us, and hospitalizations are increasing by about 4% per day, and case levels are rising in all ages. So it's a real, I guess, alert to all of us. Take strong encouragement, vaccinations are working. But we're not bulletproof, you know, having received a double vaccine. It's still, we need caution.
Mm. Can you put that, the hospital figures and the ICU figures, into a bit of context for us, please? I mean, how much pressure is the hospital system under at the minute, and where are you projecting things to go?
Yeah, well, you know, it's, I always make a point, it's what we always need to understand is that numbers of COVID patients in hospital have a disproportionate impact on the hospital system. So, you know, we've 11,000 beds in the hospital system, which I might say 258 or 248 is not high. However, for all of those cases, we have to work through very strict and strong infection prevention and controls to protect those patients and to protect others. We have to put people in isolation units and wards. We have to segregate out people. So it has a really strong impact. And we have to protect other patients, vulnerable patients, from outbreaks. So a very strong impact on the hospital system at a time when we are seeing emergency department attendances well above what they were at this time in 2019, pre-pandemic. So we're seeing huge levels of delayed care coming through from people who have delayed their care. So there's no doubt the four waves of this virus and COVID, and put on top of that a cyber attack, has put our hospital system under significant pressure. So, yeah, rising cases have a disproportionate effect and a significant impact.
I suppose a lot of people will be wondering, like, we are 80% fully protected in the adults, we are 90% one dose protected. Why are we seeing such a, what seems like quite a significant increase in hospital admissions and ICU admissions?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I guess the status, because I just want to assure your listeners again, what we are seeing, and even now today, we are seeing the benefits of the vaccination program has reduced the levels of illness, reduced the levels of hospitalization that we would have seen previously, reduced the levels of people in ICU, and it's saved lives. It's reduced the levels of mortality. Because back in January, we were at 2,020 people in hospital and 212 people in ICU. So the vaccination program is working, but it's very high transmission levels in the community. None of us have 100% protection from getting the virus. What we are seeing is people are hospitalized. The length of stay is shorter than it was in January earlier this year. So the level of sickness is not as strong across the board, but still, as I mentioned, some people are very sick in hospital.
Moving on to another issue, Paul, a number of professors in the papers today, including Luke O'Neill and Anthony Staines, calling for Ireland not to begin a campaign of booster vaccines until poorer parts of the world have been vaccinated. Obviously, the WHO has also been calling for that. Will the HSE heed that call, or do you plan to go ahead with the booster campaign?
Well, just two responses to your question there, Sean. On the first one, we await guidance from the National Immunisation Advisory Committee and indeed government, what government policy decides to do in relation to booster campaigns. We have been planning that scenario over the last few weeks. We have been looking at how we use our vaccination centres and GPs and pharmacies in conjunction with a flu vaccine programme throughout the winter. So we've been planning for those scenarios. But ultimately, that's a decision for government, specifically in relation to sharing of vaccines and to developing countries. I have a strong belief, that we have to do something on a global level. These are policy matters for government, but I did some work previously. I worked with TROCRA earlier on in my career, did some work with them in African countries and Southeast Asia. And, I saw it firsthand, a very clear inequity that exists, particularly in healthcare systems. And we have to be really cognizant of this. This is a global pandemic, and we all have to play our part in that. But I do believe it's possible to, when you look at the level of vaccines that the EU has procured, that Ireland has procured, that we can carry out a booster campaign, along with supporting developing countries as well. But I do believe we should.
OK, finally, Paul, the Sunday Independent reporting again this week about extra payments from the HSE to some nursing homes, to quote in the paper, favoured nursing homes for residents with complex care needs. Ty Daly from Nursing Home Ireland looking for clarity on what payments are being made as they're outside a fair deal. So what's the criteria that the HSE is using for these kind of top up payments, and does it show that fair deal is in serious need of reform?
Well, I'll just say firstly, the fair deal is a very significant funding for all nursing homes, very significant support to protect older people from hospitalisation or attending the hospital. So it's a very key scheme for us. HSE don't determine the policy in relation to Fair Deal. Prices are set by the NTPF. There is, within that Fair Deal scheme, facility for payments to certain disadvantaged or people needing extra supports, and that's all facilitated under the scheme. But from our perspective, the Fair Deal scheme is a very key scheme. It's a key scheme for all nursing homes. And along with that, there has been very good, significant funding for private nursing homes throughout the pandemic for the temporary payment scheme that was in place to support infection prevention control measures. So it's all facilitated in the scheme, and the scheme is very valuable to us.
Okay, Paul Reid, CEO of the HSE, thanks for joining us this morning. And I will let you escape without a question about Leeds losing 5-1 to Man United yesterday.
I'm sure you
were in a in a headspace of your own there. Thanks a million for joining us on the record on News Talk.
On the record with Gavin Riley
on News Talk.